Welcome to Crossroads, you guys. My name's Robbie. It's great to have you here. We're going to start our time off together by worshiping together. We're going to use these songs to talk about the things that we're passionate about, the things we want to grow in, and invite God into our journey. Why don't you guys stand up, and we'll sing this song together, all right?
I once was dead in sin, alone and hopeless. A child of wrath, I walk condemned. New life, and in your love and kindness, raise me up with Christ and make me righteous.
as songs to help us articulate the journey that we find ourselves on, right? We sing songs like we just did, like, God, thanks for giving us life through Jesus. You know, when I forget who I am, tell me, remind me who I am, because the world is trying to tell me something different. And so these come really naturally. You know, we're like, yeah, because I need to know that. I need to experience more of Jesus' life in my life, you know? And we also sing songs that sort of speak of the other side of the coin, you know, when things aren't going well. And so I know we come into this room from all different places. Some of us have known Jesus for a long time. Some of us are just seeking. But I can tell you, as someone who's been following Jesus for a long time, that there are days that are just rough. And so we sing songs that reflect that as well. And as a follower of Jesus, I say that even on those days, even the days when I've been waiting, like, God, where are you? Where are you? That it's important for me to tell God, I'll still praise you. You know, I have been waiting for years, and I keep saying, God, would you heal me of type 1 diabetes? Would you do that? Because I feel like I walk with a limp that no one can see all the time. And I still have it, right? I still, every day I wake up with it. And yet, I know it's good for my soul, good for my life to say, and yet, God, I will still praise you because you're worthy. So it's so American of us to say, like, if I don't get what I want the first time, then I'm just on to the next thing. But I am not first an American. I am first a follower of Jesus. And so I'm going to say my allegiance is still with you, God, even though I can't see you in this moment. So here's what I'd like for us to do. If you don't know Jesus personally, I want you to think of one place in your life where you've been waiting, one place in your life where you're like, gosh, God, if you are who you say you are, maybe you would ask him to, like, show up in this area of my life. And if you are a follower of Jesus, to say, here's an area of my life that I've been waiting, and I'm going to say, and yet I will still praise you. So, real quick, let's just close our eyes. And let's think of that one place. And then we'll sing this song from that place. Sing, take this fainted heart. Oh, Doing this, I just want to frame that up a little bit. This right here, this is like the universal sign of surrender. It's the universal sign of like, into your hands I commit my spirit. Like imagine in war, somebody goes like this, they're saying, I surrender to your authority. That's all. There's nothing super freaky about this other than what you're seeing are people saying, I surrender to your authority, God. Into your hands I commit my spirit. So if that's what's going on inside of you, inside your person, inside your heart, that's an appropriate response. So I feel like I want to sing this this chorus again, and I want to do this. So the chorus part, let's do that, right? Here we go.
Into your hands I commit my spirit. Into your hands I lay me down. Into your I commit my spirit. Into your hands I lay. Into your hands. Into your hands I commit my spirit. Into your hands I lay me down. Into your hands I commit my spirit. Into your hands I lay me down. For you will.
God, I thank you that you would make a place like this where we can come and say out loud that we want and we need your redemptive power in our lives. So let me just say thanks for drawing us here and so you would speak to us. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Guys, thanks so much for worshiping with us. It's so good for us as a community to come together and say these things. Hey, do a quick say hi to somebody around you and then have a quick seat, all right? So in a couple weeks, we are kicking off...
Mr. Shaw, how are you today, sir? I need to talk to you about something quite important. I need to see something. It's not really see. I need to discuss what I bring to the table... is a number of things, actually. A great problem solver. I'm able to analyze some data. My biggest weakness is working too hard, sir. Pardon me, sir. Well, Peter makes more than me, and he's only been here a year. Actually, I know I work harder than Peter. I hear that from even Sean says that. I'm not complaining. I'm still your number one fan. Sir, I wake up in the morning and I go to bed at night thinking about how to grow this business, time and effort, maximums of both. Straight A's all the time, not even None of the time, just all the time, sir.
To conclude,
can I have a raise?
Oh, honey, that's so good.
Thanks, Mom.
He's ready for you.
Very excited for our next series. You know, we spend more of our life working than probably anything else in our life. And so if you are looking for a series to bring friends or family to, there's really no better thing. This is going to be highly practical, super inspiring. You're not going to want to miss it. And during the series, we're going to be doing some fun things. One of those fun things we're doing is the Unpolished Conference. So you could go to the Unpolished Conference. You could volunteer at the Unpolished Conference. You can find all about it at unpolishedconference.com. This is going to be an incredible series that you're not going to want to miss. I'm Matt. I'm the campus pastor of Crossroads Anywhere. I'm pumped to tell you about two things today that are tailor-made for our Anywhere community. The first are Go Trips. I don't know if you know this, but every year this team, our team, sends hundreds of people all over the world to serve people, to bless people, and ultimately change the world. We believe that's what God has called us to. So we go to South Africa, to Nicaragua, to India, to Louisiana, and you can be a part of that. No matter who you are, where you live, what stage of life you're in, what you believe, you can go serve and have your life totally changed. And this year, we have a special Go Anywhere trip. We're going to go to South Africa together. I'd love for you to come with me to South Africa. You can find out about that trip in particular and all of the trips we do. We have trips for families, for doctors, for students, doesn't matter who you are, at crossroadsgo.net. You can find all the trips, sign up for more information, to join the trip, the whole deal. It opens up this weekend. And if you want more information, I'd love for you to come to an info session. This Sunday at 1:30, we're going to stream live an info session where you can get all your questions answered. You can find out all the background about where we go and why we go. And if you want to come to that, just shoot us an email at anywhere@crossroads.net. We'll send you the link. And if you can't make it, we'll send you the recorded video afterwards. We want everybody to have an opportunity to go. One of the things that happens when you go is you create friends and community. I don't know if you've ever found it difficult around Crossroads to get connected to other people, make deep friendships, have a sense of belonging and community. And we're about to make that a whole lot easier. This is probably the thing I'm most excited about right now. We've been working on a tool that is going to allow all of us in a couple of weeks to join groups, no matter where we live, what we're interested in, what kind of group we want to join. We're going to all have an opportunity to be united and have community. The critical thing that has to happen to make that possible in a couple of weeks is leaders. We need leaders, hundreds, in fact, hundreds of you, no matter where you live. We want you to sign up to be leaders. You can go to crossroads.net/groups. You can click a button that says sign up to be a group leader. You can learn all about that. What I want you to know is we're going to give you content. We're going to give you tools, equipping, and resources. We're going to make this really easy for you. But I'd love for you to go become a leader and post a group. Post a group where people can find you to attend the weekend together with you on the weekend. Or post a group where people can study the Bible together. Or a young married couples groups. It can be anything that you can imagine. But I want you to be a part of creating community right where you live for all of us in the Anywhere world. We do all of these things, and in a minute, we're going to hear a story of life change that happens when we get in community. We think this really matters, and while we do that, we're going to have a chance to be generous. We do this every week. If you're brand new, we're not interested in your money. There's zero pressure to participate. You can, of course, do that, but what this is our weekly rhythm where we fuel the life change that happens around here, and all the things like Go Trips, things like this group tool that's going to launch in a couple of weeks, things like this weekend experience where we believe we're called to fuel those things. And so you can go to crossroads.net/give on your phone. You can set up a reoccurring gift or a one-time gift. And as we do that, we're going to hear stories from people whose lives have been totally changed because they got in community. Glad you're here.
Make friends, like not at a bar, like not going out on Friday night. I'm not going to make like deep friendships doing that. And we did not know each other at that time, but we both showed up on a Saturday morning. It was awesome. There were like 30 people here.
And so we did this for 12 weeks.
We met every Saturday morning up until the Flying Pig.
Race day came and all of us crossed the finish line. And I remember personally feeling tons of emotion watching my friends cross the finish line. And for whatever reason, found myself in tears at the end of the race cheering them on.
None of us really knew each other 4 months ahead of time, and now we're like getting emotional watching each other like accomplish this thing. it became so much more than the activity of running. It became like true community really naturally.
And you're around each other and you're sweaty and you're smelly and you really get to be vulnerable with each other. And so through that experience, there was a depth of relationship that we experienced.
After the race is over, like, we all just kept hanging out, all the people from our group. Like, we're not training for anything anymore, but we love spending time together.
Which ultimately led us to meeting on Wednesday nights where we do dinner together. And so it turned into our community. It turned into the people that when we had problems, we would go to. And
yeah.
When we had successes, we would celebrate with. The Amens were really like our mom and dad. And they invited us in and created a place where we were able to create like really safe community. To see their commitment to each other and to see that the way that they love their kids and to see the way they serve each other has been just a really good example for us to try to learn from. We value them as an example, but we also value them as like a part of our family too. It's just given us a sense of belonging, and I have found a safe place and people who genuinely want to invest in us. And I know that I'm a better man because of the people that our running group and our Wednesday night group have put in our lives. I was single and didn't really have a vision for family, didn't have a vision for marriage. Knew that someday I wanted to do those things, but had no clue how to get there. We had people that definitely challenged me and held me accountable to things and got to a place where I started thinking, like, whoa, this is sooner rather than later.
And so we started dating like 2 months later, and now fast forward, we are getting married in 2 months at Crossroads Uptown. I definitely didn't see that coming out of a running group.
We're doing our rehearsal dinner here at the Amens because this is where we met. A lot of our community that we met 2 years ago are gonna be around the table that night, so it is so symbolic of who we are and what we want to be, where we're going. And like every single guy's dream who goes to church found a girl at church. but it wasn't in a building, it was in a community group.
That is sweet, 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 beautiful. Man, well, that's a picture that we often don't see in our rugged individualism society called America that actually, I believe, and we're going to look at, hurts relationships, hurts friendships. And the opposite side of the spectrum often happens. We're actually alone. We're isolated. And I think we've got a little fun thing that shows the complete opposite of what we just saw. Let's check it out.
Gotta help losing my mind. Keep getting this feeling you wanna leave this all behind. Thought we were going strong. Thought we were holding on. Aren't we? No, they don't teach you this in school. Now my heart's breaking and I don't know what to do. Thought we were going strong. Thought we were holding on, aren't we? You and me got a whole lot of history. We can be the greatest thing that the world has ever seen. You and me got a whole lot of history. So don't let it go. We can make some more. We can live forever. All of the the fights. We always found a way to make it out alive. Thought we were going strong. Thought we were holding on. Aren't we? You and me. Oh,
Good. That was awesome. Oh, man. So that's what we're going to look today. We're going to look at the juxtaposition of in being an individual versus being in a deep, deep abiding friendship. So let's pray before I do that. God, I thank you that you care about us and you've cared about us enough to bring us here and give us something of value. And that's what I'm asking happens, that all of us have some value added to our lives because of your truth that's found in the Bible. Help me to be clear. Help me to be concise today. And most importantly, help us to become the people you've always designed and desired us to be. And I pray these things according to the name and character of Jesus. Amen. Well, good to see you. My name is Brian. I'm what's called a senior pastor around here. It's awesome to be with us today. And boy, it's a historic day here at Crossroads. We have the very first day, and welcome to everybody who is at Crossroads Uptown in our brand new building. Yes, it's been a rehabilitation of a Cincinnati landmark, the formerly known as Old St. George. I don't know if you have seen what it looks like. Here's what the building looks like right now. You've got the outside spires all rebuilt from fire destroyed. Inside the sanctuary chapel, whatever auditorium we're calling it. The kids club hall where monks used to hang out. Now kids are. Another one of the area and also inside of the courtyard. I thank you for all who are in at Crossroads. Everyone who's a part of the I'm In campaign. Your generosity has made that thing come alive. Well done. Well done. Thank you. Now, I just forwarded some photos that I just got like 10 minutes ago. I don't know if our guys have been able to get them up, but this is the very first day. People were standing in line before the 10:30 service to get in line. Standing in line. So many people have come for the very first service ever in this. You could see a bunch of young folk here. Man, I feel like an old guy whenever I look at this. So many people coming from all over the place. We have not had enough seats for everybody to sit actually in the thing itself. So we're 10 minutes in. Every seat is taken. People are standing outside because God's moving. How good is that, huh? That's just good stuff. Thank you, video folks. Way to be on your game and get that last minute. Appreciate it. So it is great to be back with you. If you've only been here for a couple weeks or so, I actually kind of am the senior guy around here, and it's really nice to be with us today. I'm so thankful for the understanding and grace the Love Crossroads gives me to be able to get onto a different rhythm every summer, get away, do some different stuff related to my job, not have the crushing burden of having a 35-minute original message every week that people then judge you on afterwards. It's really nice to do that. So I actually love my summer routine. I get to spend time with family. I normally don't get to spend as much time with them. And I have a different routine the weekends. And it's just different all around. I really like it. It's really refreshing. But there's one thing that's not good about it. It is that my normal routines with my friends end. I can see in my calendar every week when it is I'm going to be with my friends, when predictable groups are meeting and such, and all of that goes away for 6-7 weeks or so in the summer. And actually, I feel the worst for it. I actually feel the effects physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Now, I do mean physically. There's some data I'm going to give you in just a moment. We're losing the ability in our culture to understand what relationships look like, what friendships look like. We've bastardized the name friend to think it's something that should be on Facebook. Now, I'm pro-Facebook. I'm going to talk positive about Facebook in just a moment. But just to illustrate, let's go to your handheld mobile device, if you happen to have one here today, if you're under 70. Go ahead to your handheld mobile device and open up your Facebook app. You go, oh, I don't do Facebook. Yes, you do. Just open up your Facebook app. And as you go to your Facebook app, let's now open up where all of your friends are. Under here, it's under where it says more, and I hit on favorites, friends, and you see all of your friends. Now, let's just look at our people right here. Like, all right, can I just look at them? Like, oh man, yeah, he is annoying. I don't know why he's on there, and she has issues. Yes, she does. She does. And I'm looking now as we look at all these folks. Let me ask some questions. If you were stranded in a foreign country and someone had stolen your wallet or purse, how many of these people would you call and ask for money and they would give you money? If you got a raise at work, when you got that raise, who would you call and say, hey, let's have some fun tonight, I'm buying. And you could call somebody and they wouldn't think you were trying to brag, or they wouldn't feel competitive, like, darn, I didn't get a raise. Who would genuinely celebrate with you? How many of these people do you know the names of their kids? How many of these people do you pray for? How many of these people pray for you? See, that list got a lot smaller, didn't it? These are the things that genuine friends do, and these are the kind of relationships that fewer and fewer of us are having. We treat friends like acquaintances, like commodities, like they're just folks I'm hanging with, or they're people that validate that I'm okay. One professor from Vassar College says this: treating friends like investments or commodities is anathema to the whole idea of friendship. It's not about what someone can do for you. It's who and what the two of you become in each other's presence. So says Ronald Sharp. Now, Jesus was an amazing friend. Jesus talked a lot about friendship. In the book of Matthew, chapter 11, 19, we see that friendship is part of his ability to be powerful. All of us know, no matter what your religious persuasion is or lack thereof, that Jesus is the most powerful person, an influential person who's ever walked the planet. And one of the things that was part of his DNA was being an amazing friend. Here's what he says. The Son of Man, that's him, came eating and drinking, and they say, look at him, a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. Yet wisdom is justified by her deeds. Jesus says, if you want to know if something works, just look at the output. He said, if you want to know if my life is working, wisdom is justified by our deeds. It works. I mean, people are being affected. And what's one of the criticisms he was given? You're too good of a friend. You're a friend of tax collectors and sinners. He says this in Luke chapter 16, 9. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous wealth. That means money. That when it fails, money will fail you, they may receive you into eternal dwellings. He says, use your money to buy friends because they may be in heaven and make a good place for you. You can buy friends. It's called paying for lunch. It's called giving a generous gift or some such thing. Jesus understood that friends are important and we need to be investing ourselves in them. Now, three big ideas for us today. Three big ideas. I got a 3-point outline for you. I'm going to spend most of the time in the very first point. This is a preacher's dream outline because it's 3 points and they all start with the same letter. Purpose, performance, and perseverance. Purpose, performance, and perseverance. Number one, a friend has purpose. For people to come together and have a deep abiding friendship, there has to be a purpose, something that pushes us together, something causes us to come together. Now, for some, the purpose is drinking. For some, the purpose is shopping. For some, the purpose is let's just come together and validate each other's opinions. For some, the purpose is riding. It's important that you know the purpose of what it is. Now, I've been watching some of the Olympics, not a lot of the Olympics, but some. How many of us have watched a lot of the Olympics? Let's hear from you. Who's watched a lot of the Olympics? Who hasn't really watched the Olympics at all? About 20% of us, I don't know. When I've seen the Olympics, it's been really, really cool. One of the nights that I missed, I have been reading about and it's been fascinating to watch some clips. Here's one of the more memorable moments that I missed that I don't want you to miss.
Is she going to get there? Oh, it's so close. Oh, my goodness me. Phoenix thinks she's done it. And Shaunae Miller has collapsed.
That's Shaunae Miller winning the women's 400 by diving, and because of the dive, beating the favorite American sprinter by just a fraction of a section. She dove. Now, the next day, USA Today said this. The reaction was immediate and intense. After all, Miller of the Bahamas had denied gold to one of the USA's most beloved sprinters. The questions followed. Is that legal? And the condemnations. Diving isn't running. You can't dive in the Olympics. Now, what is the purpose of the 400? Who knows? What's the purpose of the 400? To win. Not a trick or question. That's the purpose. That's the point. To win. And how are you allowed to win? Any way you can get across the line by using your own physical power and staying in your lane. That's it. You can crab walk it. You can walk in your hands. You can do anything. When people are like, oh my gosh, you can't dive. They're missing the point. You cannot miss the point of the purpose of what's bringing people together as friends. So I want to give you the gold standard purpose. You might not be there. This might not be something you're interested in, but I'll tell you, the gold standard, a purpose that cements relationships like nothing else, is the purpose of God. When you say, we are going to get together because we want more of God, when you say, we are going to get together because I want more of God, when you say, we're going to collectively have an amazing time in life and we're going to do it because we're going to get closer to our Creator, I'll tell you, it is a purpose that transcends your life and pushes you to a completely different place. Do you know and do you want those kind of friends? Most of us don't know those kind of friends, don't want those friends. We just want the kind of friends that come around and validate who I am. We want the kind of friends that just come around and go like, hey, we can say, we can have a bitch fest about our husband or about our wife. We sit around and go, oh yeah, you wouldn't believe what he did. Do you have any friends that would go, well, actually, he should have done that? Do you have any friends when you say, oh, well, she doesn't understand, she's doing this. Do you have any friends that say, hey, I think that you're just not taking care of your wife? Do you have any friends that when you come back and say, man, my boss just said this to me, he's just a jerk, the normal way we do it is, oh, he's a jerk. Your place of employment should be lucky that they have you. They should feel that. Versus a friend who has the purpose of God, and you do too, that might say, you know, your boss said that, and I've actually seen that same thing in you. I'd encourage you to dig on that a little bit. Do your friends just validate your drinking habits, or do you have any friends that go, man, it just seems like every time we're together, you're just tying another one on. Is there something about your relationship with alcohol that we need to talk about? Very, very few of us have any true friends that will do this sort of thing. This is almost like outside the bounds. If you're a friend, you won't say anything that would bum me out. You just have to validate my opinions. In a fascinating article called Faux Friendship, I'll quote as well later on, he says this: we have ceased to believe that a friend's highest purpose is to summon us to the good by offering moral advice and correction. We practice, instead, the non-judgmental friendship of unconditional acceptance and support, therapeutic friendship in Robert N. Bula's scornful term. We seem to be terribly fragile now. A friend fulfills her duty, we suppose, by taking our side, validating our feelings, supporting our decisions, helping us to feel good about ourselves. We tell white lies, make excuses when a friend does something wrong, do what we can to keep the boat steady. We're busy people. We want our friendships fun and friction-free. And in the process, we're also free of the life that God would have for us, the life that God is preparing for us, because we don't have purpose that transcends beyond just let's have fun together and validate one another. And actually, physiologically, this is hurting us. There are studies done on a section of the brain where the vagus nerve is, and the vagus nerve, it is the center of relational activity, and there's firing of neural capacitors and everything that connects there and actually affects the rest of our body. And as we don't enter into genuine, true friendships, we have a physiological issue, not just a spiritual issue. Kate Murphy, New York Times, says this: lacking authentic friendships, the smart vagus nerve is not exercised. It loses tone. One's anxiety remains high, making abiding, deep connections difficult. So it's just like, you know, if you're not like doing curls, you know, or do something, you don't do anything with your bicep, guess what? When you need to go like this, you're not going to be able to do this. And just like in that same way, when we're not exercising that part of our brain by having deep abiding friendships, when we need it, we're just not capable. We have to start slowly building up again. I want to look at the rest of our time at, I believe, the greatest friendship in the Bible. And I talked about this friendship. It's the friendship of the second king of Israel. His name is David, and his friend, Jonathan. I talked about this 18 months ago. This is all new content today. There's a number of different angles to look at this story. If you want to look at the angle I looked at it 18 months ago in a relationship thing, you can go to crossroads.net on the Wolfpack series, and it was really helpful for men and women. That's me 18 months ago. I don't look too much worse 18 months later. I don't necessarily like the look of my face right there, but nonetheless, it's a fascinating, fascinating study, so I'm going to look at it from a different angle today. So if you don't know about these guys, here's the story. Saul is the first king of Israel. He's an awful king, and God now wants him gone. So God picks David to be the second king. This is really weird because in all societies that have a monarchy, it's always the DNA oldest son or oldest daughter that's supposed to rise up and be. David is not DNA. And so you would think that his DNA son, Saul's DNA son, Jonathan, would actually be against him, but he's not. They actually become incredibly fast friends. Here's what it says in 1 Samuel 18. After David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. In the original Hebrew, it's also been translated that the soul became one with David, that their souls were knit together. This is what you and I would call today a soulmate, a soulmate. Now, our country is so lacking in the ability to understand friendship that when we see it, we don't even get it at all, that many in our country look at this and say, well, David and Jonathan, they were obviously gay. There's zero evidence of anywhere in history of that. There's zero evidence of that anywhere in the Bible. In fact, all the evidence says they are both heterosexual, all of it. There isn't a shred anywhere. The idea that we would think that if you have this attachment to someone of the same sex, that you must be gay, just shows us we don't understand friendship at all. Like, at all. We see people getting really close to the same sex. We think something weird's happened. Remember a number of years ago, Oprah and her best friend Gail had to deal with, no, we're not lesbians. We're just really good friends. We have this term called bromance that we use to kind of put something humorous when a guy really likes another guy. Here's what William says in Faux Friendship again. For all the talk of bromance lately, or mandates, the term is yet another device to manage the sexual anxiety kicked up by straight male friendships, whether in the friends themselves or in the people around them. At best, intense friendships are something we're expected to grow out of. Yes, there is such a thing in the Bible of a soulmate. It's a same-sex friend. It's not an opposite-sex person who is the one person God wants you to get married to. It's so frustrating, and we're like, ooh, I need to find my soulmate. You do not need to find your soulmate to get married. You do not. I've been around this gig a long, long, long time. I know many, 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 many people who found their soulmates and got divorced, many, 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 many. And I know many, many, many people, myself included, who didn't marry a soulmate, whatever that means, and we've had an amazing 28-year run. There is zero scientific data to have thinking of there's an opposite sex soulmate, zero biblical data at all, but there is all kinds of data about same-sex friendships being a soulmate. I mean, we know this, right? Aren't there people that you knew 10 years ago, you bump into them, it's like, bam, you pick up just where you left off. Right? It's like, bam, instantaneously. There's just some people who you can talk about anything to. There's people who, when you get back in touch with them, stuff comes alive in you that was lying dormant. I'm pro Facebook. I had an old friend started a private Facebook group just a couple weeks ago. When I went to college, I lived in a house for 4 years with a bunch of guys. I went to college for 7 years, but I lived in this house for 4 years. And in the course of that 4 years, I don't know, 25 dudes came in and out. And we had some amazing times, and we had the purpose of God. That was our purpose. And so one of the guys started a private Facebook page a couple weeks ago, and it's been fun to reconnect with those folks, many of whom I'm soulmates with. One of those guys, just an example, his name is Rick. I didn't see Rick for a long, long time after I moved out, and I knew that he had gotten into a really, really hard way, but I'd never talked with him firsthand about it. Then I was at a conference in Chicago. I knew Rick was in Chicago, and my cousin was there as well. So the three of us came together. It was like a soulmate thing of people who all didn't know each other immediately. And Rick just filled me in on his wife, Wendy, who had died of brain tumor, and all the gory details of it. And I was interested because I actually flirted with Wendy when we were in high school. And I knew the situation. And to hear the pain and difficulty of what it looks like to deal with family dynamics and kids and he went there like now. And he went there now because he knew that I could hear it and I wanted to hear it. We didn't see each other for several years again, the same thing again. And there's other dudes that I was in that house with the exact same way. Other people I've known who are that way. It's called being a soulmate, when there's something that's knitted together because you had a purpose and therefore you have identities that are very similar because of that purpose. It's powerful. It's powerful in all of us. All of us should pray and should work really hard to be able to have that dynamic right now. You can have that right now. In 1 Samuel 23, we see another aspect of this relationship. And Jonathan, Saul's son, rose and went to David of Horesh and strengthened his hand in God. He strengthened his hand in God. See, their purpose was God. Jonathan's going, hey, you might be the right king. I kind of wish I was, but we're both about God, and I know God wants you. So whatever it is, whatever it is, I will do it. I'm going to strengthen your hand in God. Who do you have in your life that's strengthening your hand? You have whoever that is, it's because you're strengthening their hand. I have had my hand strengthened so many times by friends that the illustrations and examples are many, many, many fold. One of the more significant ones was just this last summer. I have some good friends who, part of our purpose is riding. So we did a little riding journey out west, camping, going on dirt roads and stuff. Those same friends helped me pull off something else. 6 weeks, or no, 2 weeks later, I came back and I had the very first wedding in our family. My oldest daughter, Lena, just got married. Yes, you can be happy about that. The story behind the story was Nick, my now son-in-law, asked me for my daughter's hand in marriage. 2 days later, he proposed. 6 weeks later, they wanted the wedding. 6 weeks. Like, now you might say, no, why would they do that? I understand it. Because you want to enjoy the treats of marriage and God approve of it. That's why. It's like folks who have these massively long engagements, like, okay, you're either not sexually attracted to one another or you have no interest in honoring God. It's normally one of those two things. They're like, hey man, our purpose is God, and like, we don't want to wait. We flip a prayer. We've been through doing premarital counseling. We had a long engagement prayer. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, great. So all of a sudden, I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't budget plan for a wedding in 6 weeks. I mean, I've known for 25 years this was coming, but like, man, the friends are like, hey, I'll wedding coordinate it for nothing. I'll take care of food. I'll do the parking. And we had a good deal. We did have a free facility to use. We did. Old St. George we used. Now Crossroads Uptown. I think we have some pics of that beautiful day. Here they are waiting right before they got married. That's in the Harry Potter room. We call it at Uptown and down the hallway. And I think we got one more of the courtyard. Really, really cool stuff. It was an amazing time because friends were parking cars. Friends were setting up stuff. We didn't have some rental company that brought everything in. We set it up. We tore it down. It was a friend thing. They strengthened our hand and made it affordable, and it was amazing. This is, by the way, why we do woman camp, man camp. We do woman camp and man camp in large part because we want you to get with people of the same sex that you might be able to develop lasting, abiding relationships with, not just build into you as a woman, not just build into you as a man, but to genuinely and truly bond. Check those dates. Look into them. Make them happen. Second, a friend performs. A friend performs. By performing, I'm not talking, I'm performing. I'm not talking about performing that way. How do I do that? Yes, it's been a long time. I'm not performing like in stage. I mean performing a duty. Friends have a specific duty that they perform. They know this is something that I've got to hit my marks on. It's not just, hey, good for you. It's not just, I like that on social media. There's things that I'm going to do for you. This was Jonathan. He was tipping David off. He was tipping David off on when his dad was trying to kill him. It says this, then Jonathan said to David, whatever you say, I will do for you. Whatever you say, I will perform that duty for you, whatever it is. Just say what it is, and I will do it right now. My friends perform duties for us and our family to enjoy that wedding. I've had friends perform for me when we lost our house to a fire and we had no insurance. How'd they perform? They wrote us checks. I have a friend who performs a duty that I've never asked him to do. He doesn't have to do it, but it's a duty that as a friend, I guess he feels like he needs to do, and I appreciate it very much. His name is Mark, and every time I preach, he sends me a long, encouraging text. And he doesn't just encourage me to say, hey, that was good. He like recounts what I said and why it was good. It's one of the ways that he's doing something that actually adds value. A friend of mine, Darren, who's also our executive pastor here at Crossroads, he's a friend. He came to me in April or May. I think it was April, and he said, hey, man, I got to tell you, you know, your summer break is going to be coming up, and I got to tell you, I've never looked forward more than I do now of you getting away. He said, I don't know what it is, but you're just like, you're very curt. You're more blunt than normal. You get more angry. I don't know if you're tired from the campaign. I don't know what it is, but it's just good for all of us for you to leave. Now, guess what? If he was only my direct report, he would never say that to me. But he's my friend. He's my friend. And that actually helped me and made the 2 months before I went away actually better for me and others because I had a friend who performed a duty for me. The other night, Lib and I went out with some good friends, some soulmate friends of ours, and I call him Sunshine, and I would call his wife Moonbeam. Sunshine and Moonbeam, because when they're around, like, the place just brightens up. Everything brightens up when they're around. They're happy, happy. Hey, man. They're just good. They're laughing. Not in a fakey way, either. It's not some fakey, like, sugar. They're just, ooh. So Lib and I went out and we did a double date with them and it was amazing. Of course, always amazed them. All the lights are always shining bright. Everything's happy when you're around them. And actually, when they're not happy, they let you know. They're not like fakey folks, but everything's happy, so we're having a good time. Well, we had other friends who we know are not that way right now. They're in the midst of their family dealing with clinical depression. So we needed to perform our duty. We need to leave our good little time having dinner and go out of our way, drive out of our way the opposite direction at night and just go and hang out on their porch and bring some sunshine and moonbeams. We sat on the porch like, hey, telling jokes. We're trying to like uplift spirits and everything. And when you have clinical depression, it's not that easy, but you can certainly try. That's what friends do. We try. And if someone can't receive that or that's not helping, you know what you do as a friend? You just sit there in the mud with them. You sit there in the mud and you're just present and you're with them. There's things that friends do. There's specific marks that we make. There's ways that we serve one another. It could be, for me, installing a clutch inside of a friend's bike. It could be knowing that there's a time of prayer. It could be sending a text prayer. I pray a prayer via text and I send it to them, so they can see what I prayed to God on their behalf. All these things take time. And this is why there's only so many soulmates or friends you can have. We can have a lot of people who are friends, but we can only have a few people or several people who are truly, truly friends. Because if you're a real friend, you're going to do stuff. You're not just going to say, hey, man, my thoughts are with you. Whoo, I heard about that. Whoo, man, my thoughts are with you. Thank you so much. I needed your thoughts. Man, your thoughts just made the difference. Man, geez, same with your thoughts on pickles and mustard. That made a difference on me too. So keep thinking thoughts on pickles and mustard. Keep thinking nice thoughts for me. No, that doesn't do anything. No, go to the freaking porch. Go to the porch and sit there. Go to the porch and try to elevate or try to serve or try to pay for something or try to pray for something, something. This is what friends do. Jesus said in John 15, greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. You're my friends if you do whatever I command you. Jesus says we have to lay down our life. And guess what? Jesus is God. He could lay down his life for all of his friends, which is all of us who receive him, by putting out his arms on a cross. And by doing so, he laid down his life so that you and I don't have to spend an eternity away from God. That's one way he could serve us. But you and I aren't God. We're finite. And there's only so many people we can lay our life down for. There's only so many people that we can actually tangibly and tactilely serve. But we have to know who those people are, and we have to actually step out. Jesus also says something interesting here. He says, you are my friends if you do what I command you. You're my friends if you do what I command you. There's some people who believe Jesus but aren't the friend of Jesus. Why? Because they're not performing the duties you'd want them to perform. doesn't mean you have to perform for Jesus to love you. It doesn't mean if you don't perform, Jesus doesn't love you. It simply means if you don't think that your actions change, if there aren't things that you're doing that you don't want to do, but you know Jesus wants them to do it, if there aren't things that you're stopping doing that you know Jesus wants you to stop to do, you're not a friend. And you might have people around you say that behavior is okay, but no, Jesus says, no. If you're my friend, you're going to be doing things that honor me. You're going to change your life. And our friends do things that change their life for us, and we do things that change our life for them. That's part of the glue of being a soulmate. Third thing, a friend perseveres. A friend perseveres. We live in a culture in which everything is disposable. Our food is obviously disposable. Our furniture at IKEA is disposable. Our shoes are disposable. I mean, no one gets their shoes resold anymore virtually. I mean, what do we need? Like one shoe repair store for every 200,000 people probably. Man, we live in a disposable economy, disposable culture. And so therefore, our relationships, our friendships are disposable. We cycle through folks. Some of this is understandable, but some of it is a character issue for us because we don't persevere. You know, on the battlefield, their guys will always pull somebody who's hurt back. Guys will risk their lives to bring back a dead body all the way back. Why is that? It's because everybody sees that and knows if I'm ever in that situation, someone's going to come for me. It's not just for that person or that dead person who's there. It sends a message to everybody else that I will never be left alone. And yet, when we develop a reputation that we will not persevere, that we will leave someone alone, we lose confidence from other people to build significant friendships. If all we do is talk bad about the people who did this to us or that to us, and we just jump friendships, I'm very, 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 very cautious when someone has time to have a new great relationship with me, because I always wonder, where'd that time come from? Where'd that relational time come from? Did no one want to be your friend? Or did you leave all those friends to be with me? It just is worthy of a look. We have to be persevering. Some time ago, I got what was the most hurtful and insulting email I've ever gotten. And I get a lot of those. it was difficult. And it was from a friend. So I said, man, maybe I'm reading this wrong. I showed it to another friend. I said, am I interpreting this right? They said, oh, yeah, that's... you're interpreting it right. I said, okay, I'm going to respond. So I typed out a response, and before I sent it, I showed it to my friend. I said, is this coming off okay? Am I using the right language? Said, yeah, that's good. You should send it. I said, good. So I sent it. Didn't hear anything back. Then I finally heard back. The person was hurt. And I would see the person in the car driving. I'd call them up. Hey, how you doing? Didn't want to talk. Reaching out, nothing. So I figured it must be over, right? So some time passed. A few months ago, send out an email to him. Said, hey, if we talk about this or that, do you want to talk about it? Maybe, I'm not sure. So they were real indefinite, so I just let it go. Then 2 weeks later, I reached out again. Hey, do you want to, it's virtually going nowhere, which is okay. If good vibes in that relationship has to end, so be it. That does happen sometimes. And sometimes a great relationship just has to end for various reasons. These aren't marriages, these are friends, right? But the important thing was just to persevere. Because I've had people persevere for me, and I need to persevere for others. And most importantly, God perseveres for me all the time. Can I get an amen on that? Jesus says, you're my friend. My goodness, Jesus perseveres for me all the time. He's my model. The bromance movies aren't my model. Other people I know who are talking about things, they're not my model. Jesus is my model, who's laid down his life for me. And he's encouraging us to be just like him, which is to lay down our life for our friends, to have our souls knit together, to not have disposable friendships, to have actual times on the calendar where we can see, this is my people. These are the folks I'm spending time with. Experts say it takes 10,000 hours to become an expert at something. 10,000 hours to master something. It would be great this weekend if we could collectively as Crossroads easily put 10,000 hours into dealing with friendships. We should be able to do that collectively easily. And you, this is not hard. This is not natural. Actually, this is very unnatural. Bumped into somebody in our culture specifically. Bumped into somebody yesterday who's Indian. And he's full-blooded DNA Indian, but he's been raised in America, so he has American culture with full-blooded DNA American Indian. And he's now in some group where other Indians have come over to the United States who actually have Indian culture. And he said it's very awkward because when we're walking, these guys will reach out and grab my hand. I'm struggling with it. I know he's talking about it. Over in India, you see guys who are crammed together in the back of a pickup truck. They're just like hanging all over each other. They're fine to have physical contact as friends. But in our culture, like, I can't touch you. Hey, slap you on the back. Don't touch my inner thigh. We just kind of make a little joke about that thing. Because we're not experts here. We don't get it at all. We're clueless as a result of our rugged individualism, our selfishness, our reliance on the government. I don't know. There's 100 different reasons. We're just clueless. And it takes time to get good at this stuff and learn how to do it. This is why we're having groups here at Crossroads. And a big outcome of this series is to get us in groups. And why some of us, God is wanting you to be a friend by being a group leader. You want Jesus. You've been following him. You're qualified to be a group leader. You can go to the website and sign up to be a group leader as we try to get folks in groups that connect real, sustaining, ongoing friendships. That's what we want from you. We want the best for you, and the best for you is to be like Jesus. The best for you is to be like those who are like him, Jonathan and David, is to embrace the ability to be a soulmate and be a blessing to somebody. God, I pray that you would do that very thing this week, that very thing in all of our lives. Help us to rekindle relationships that have gone dry. Help us to kindle non-existent relationships right now. Bring us to relational fullness, because in the midst of that relationship, I just think of you, God. You exist, Father, Son, Holy Spirit. You exist in community. You exist in a group setting. And I know that if we're to be like you, we have to have a group setting as well. Bring those folks around us. Help us find them. Help us create them. And Jesus, we thank you for being the ultimate friend. And I pray these things in your name, in your identity. Amen. All right, fantastic. Have an amazing week. We'll see you next weekend.